Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
Hey, this is Hannah, HRN's program manager. It's HRN's 10th anniversary and now our summer fun drive. So show your support for independent, revolutionary, entertaining food radio by becoming a monthly recurring donor. HRN is powered by a passionate community of thoughtful eaters, and we need each and every one of you to show your support so that we can keep bringing you your favorite food podcasts. It takes a village, and every dollar donated, every listener tuning in is essential to our continued success. So set up a donation for $10 every month. You'll show us that you want to be a part of a bright future for HRN. And you'll get one of our brand new limited edition Pizza Pocket t-shirts. So snag your new favorite tea and show us some love, all for the price of about two fancy lattes each month. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate today. And thank you.
Welcome to HRN Happy Hour. It's 5 o'clock somewhere, and somewhere is Bushwick. I'm Kat Johnson, the communications director at Heritage Radio Network, joined by my co-host, Katie Mosman-Wadler.
I'm sorry, I totally failed at that unison. Hi, Kat.
You were like,
I was like, I was so close, and I just chickened out at the last minute. But we do have some other folks here in the studio. We have a full house today.
Yes, we do.
We have the wonderful program manager, Hannah Forden, whose lovely voice you just heard.
Yeah, I have to say, your guys' psychic abilities are fading, that you can't, like, knock out a unison word.
Well, it's weird because I'm like not facing Kat today, which is unusual.
Yeah.
We've like sort of a lot of people in here, which we're very excited about today.
But yeah, usually they have really good ESP for our listeners at home.
I know, we're rusty.
Don't judge us.
Also in the booth, we've got our engineer Jeet Paul. Hey, Jeet, what's up?
Hello.
And we have a full house of very special guests today. We have Georgia in the house.
What? Hotlanta. Are people still saying that?
No, it's the ATL.
No one ever said Hotlanta. I lived in Atlanta for a year and a half, and it was fantastic, except for the driving. But the food, I dream about the food often, and I'm so excited to have all these amazing chefs in the house. We also have our intern, Oscar. Hello, Oscar.
Howdy, people.
And we have some friends from Ink House PR as well. Shout out.
Hi.
Hello.
Let's have our guest of honor chefs introduce themselves so that we can hear everyone's voices and know who is who.
Okay. We'll start with Savannah to my right.
Hello, everyone. I am Savannah Sasser.
Can you say also like a little bit about your place?
Yeah. I'm at, the restaurant that I am the executive chef at is the Expat in Athens, Georgia. So a short drive outside of Atlanta, yes. It's only about an hour, but I'm super excited to be a part of the Georgia Grown program.
I am Greg Lippman. I have Piastra in the northwest of Atlanta, just a small, shorter drive than the Athens. Italian restaurant just outside. Also very excited to be the Georgia Grown program.
Hello, everyone. I'm Julio Delgado. I'm the executive chef for New Ram Brewing on the Beltline in Atlanta, and I'm also a future owner of Mina Olivia Pizzeria in Alpharetta, which is hopefully open in a few months, but super excited to be here.
And I am Holly Shute, and I am the executive chef for Georgia Grown, which is the marketing arm of the Georgia Department of Agriculture. So I head up the program that all these chefs are a part of. So, and we're very excited to be in New York. We are cooking at the James Beard House tomorrow night for the fifth time.
Yay!
So
that is quite an accomplishment, by the way. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And Georgia was the first state to cook at the James Beard House.
Yes, like, we were the first state to be invited to cook at the James Beard House. And now they want it to be an annual event. So I get to take different chefs with us each year. With the exception of Savannah that comes every year to run the kitchen for us.
Ah. There's no rotating out, Savannah.
No.
That's not happening.
No, that's not an option.
I'll take it.
We have a Taste of Georgia happening tomorrow at the Beard House. We also have a Taste of Georgia here in the studio because, Holly, you are the best, and you brought us treats. And
that's how I roll.
So good. We're so excited. Can you talk about some of the produce that is on the table before us so that we can start eating it?
Yes, we have some wonderful Georgia peaches from North Georgia from J. Moore Farms. And they sent them down specially on Tuesday for me to take up Wednesday, which I wrapped in bubble wrap to get them here.
They're still sitting on bubble wrap. They look so precious.
And we have some wonderful Georgia blueberries because a lot of people don't realize that Georgia goes from 1 to 3 in the production of blueberries in the whole country. So it's a big crop for us in the state, and they're super sweet and delicious. And we also have a sparkling rosé from Wolf Mountain Vineyards up in Dahlonega, Georgia. So we're very excited, and that's going to be served at the Beard House tomorrow night as well. So y'all are getting a treat.
Are you doing all Georgia wine at the dinner?
Yes. The meal is paired with all Georgia wine, spirits, and beers.
Ooh.
Wow.
So
are there still tickets for tomorrow, or is it completely sold out?
It's oversold.
Sorry, everyone.
You guys waited too
late. We've been
late.
Doing this a lot on Happy Hour lately, where we're like, hey, we're doing all these super cool things, and don't you wish you bought tickets like months ago?
Well, just get on the James Beard website and keep it in mind, because we come usually every June, because that's when most of the produce is coming in season. So
yeah. So mark your calendar, June 2020.
Yep.
If you don't want to be left off this train next year.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And get on the email list, because there's a lot of Georgia chefs that come up to the Beard House. Steven Satterfield is going to be there next week. Nick Leahy was there like a week or two ago. Mm-hmm. So Georgia is like repping hard at the James Beard House.
Yeah. So get on that.
Yeah. We have an incredible food community in Atlanta.
Yes, you do. And can we just say the Giving Kitchen that won the James Beard Humanitarian Award this year?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean,
and
Michelle
Bailey.
And Michelle Bailey. Let's definitely not forget Mashama Bailey, who gave me a ride the last time I was in Savannah. So she's not only a great chef, but she's a very nice lady. I love Georgia. Guys,
yes, I'm excited. Georgia. So we've got a couple of quick announcements, and then we're going to dive into a much larger interview with all of these folks, and we're going to eat some peaches and blueberries and drink some rosé, and we're going to tell you all about it. But first up, we've got a couple of headlines. There's our headline music.
That's good music.
That
this
is
week,
quality.
Jeet.
Yeah. Thank you, Jeet.
Super newsy.
We are super excited and hot news. We are going, Kat and I are going to Charlotte next week for the International Symposium on Bread at Johnson & Wales University. And you can follow along with our coverage on Heritage Radio Network on tour. And we're super stoked to eat all the carbs, and you can eat them too. This year is a really awesome set of hands-on workshops. So a lot of baking is going to be going down. We're going to share all the best tips with you. It's going to be awesome. So tune in HRN on tour after the 15th of June.
And as you heard me go on and on about at the beginning of the show, now I get to do it live. It is our summer fun drive. So all of you listening at home know that there are 2 times a year where we knock on your door and say, hi, can you please show us how much you love food radio? Because we are a small nonprofit and we cannot do what we do without each and every one of you showing your support no matter the amount. And I have some really, really exciting new member gifts for you guys. So get excited if you want to rep your love for HRN this summer and look super stylish in the process. We have a brand new t-shirt, which I'm just going to say Pizza Pocket. Mm-hmm. You can see a picture of it sort of on our website. We will have more pictures coming soon, but it is so good. So check that out. We have a new enamel pin coming, which is also pizza themed since we are, of course, pizza powered radio. We have a custom beautiful chocolate bonbon set from our amazing neighbors around the corner at Fine and Raw Chocolate for some extra special generous donors. all of those things are limited edition as it is our 10th anniversary. So these are very, very special. They're limited quantities, and we want to make sure they go home to some very special HRN fans. So no matter how much you're able to give, we will truly, truly appreciate it. We need your help to keep going for another 10 years of food radio. So go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate, and I'll send you a handwritten thank you note.
Yes, you will.
Yeah. My handwriting is not great, but it comes from the heart.
It's true.
Yeah.
I am sensing also a theme with all of our member gifts. They're all definitely super food related.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my God, it's almost like we're a food radio station.
Weird. It's kind of like we never stop eating.
Because we don't.
But we are happy to share that with our friends and our food radio loving friends as well. Okay, we are going to share a couple of headlines from this week with you. My first up one is a remembrance. So this Saturday is going to be 1 year since the world lost Anthony Bourdain. And in honor of this anniversary, HRN has uncovered a previously unreleased conversation between Bourdain and our host Andrew Friedman from back in 2014. This interview was originally meant for print, so this was something that Andrew had in his archives and has recently unearthed, and we are publishing it for the first time, never before heard, here on HRN. It's available today. So check that out on Andrew Talks to Chefs.
And if you're interested in fishing and sustainability and the development of new farm tech and women in that industry...
I'm interested in all those things.
Okay, so check. So you should keep your eye out for the 100th episode of Speaking Broadly. Congratulations to the one and only Dana Cowan. So on the most recent episode, she spoke with aquaculture expert Jen Bushman about all of those things, changes and improvements in fishing and sustainability. So don't miss that one. And we're going to have even more coming from Dana Cowan next week for Meat and Three. So stay tuned.
Yes. And lastly, in honor of our Georgia guests, we have a peachy headline. This week on Feast Your Ears, Harry Rosenblum is joined by Jessica and Stephen Rose, the couple behind the Peach Truck. You guys know about them? Peach Truck?
Yes.
They're based in Nashville. I think they do deliver in Atlanta some. They brought Harry into their world of peaches, explain why this fruit isn't just meant for the produce section, and share the joys of delivering nature's candy across the country in a 1964 Jeep Gladiator pickup truck. Awesome. I'll take my peaches however I can get them. All right. That's our headlines. So speaking of peaches, let's start there. So, Holly, tell us more about the peaches that you brought up. And, Greg, you said that peach season is really great this year. So what about that makes it great?
Well, I've had from three different local farmers all the peaches. Right now, if I'm correct, these are spring rose peaches that we're having? No? Okay. That's what I had just gotten. I got two cases of them from two different local farmers. They're fantastic this year because of the rains earlier in the season and that massive heat wave that we just had. All of the sugars, they're fantastic. They're eating really well. These are smaller peaches. Wonderful flavor to them. I don't know about these that you have right now. Holly will tell you about them.
They are called Flavor Rich.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Sounds
great. And they come from North Georgia, Jaymore Farms.
And Holly, can you talk a little more about the mission of Georgia Grown and kind of what you guys are all about and how that translates into us receiving delicious fruit?
Absolutely. So Georgia Grown is actually the marketing arm of the Georgia Department of Agriculture. So it's a membership-based program, and farmers and producers join, and then we help them promote their businesses. So we get a lot of craft and artisan product makers as well as farmers. And my job is to basically show consumers how to use the products and share them with them and share them with restaurant chefs. And it's a little bit too much of a job for one person. So we have a Georgia Grown Executive Chef program. And each year, chefs can apply from around the state through the Georgia Restaurant Association. And we select between 4 and 6 chefs to be chef ambassadors for us. And they travel around the state and do demos and do events and dinners and luncheons for us to help promote Georgia products. And then as a thank you and show of our appreciation, they get to come and cook at the James Beard House. So it's a pretty good trade-off.
It's pretty awesome. Yeah.
I say with a mouthful of sweet Georgia blueberries.
I took one blueberry from the box, and then I was like, that's like the blueberryest blueberry ever, and then I grabbed like a handful.
Yeah. It's also like kind of hard for me to admit that these are incredibly sweet and delicious because I'm from Maine, which likes to think of itself as a leader in blueberries, but it's kind of a different beast up there. Like it's a whole different thing. These are incredibly delicious and super plump and sweet, and like they have a lot to offer.
Yeah, and our blueberry farmers have had a couple of bad years with weather. So this year was a good year, and we're just helping them promote them however we can. So spread the word. Look for Georgia blueberries.
Will do.
So when a product has like a Georgia-grown label on it, like say an ice cream or another like packaged good, what does it have to do to have that label on it where it's not just like a peach or a blueberry?
Well, it's actually... the product just has to be made in Georgia. So they could be sourcing some of the ingredients from outside the state. But if the person that's producing it is in Georgia, they can use the Georgia Grown logo.
Awesome. And Holly, can you talk a little bit about, since this is your first time on Happy Hour, a little bit about your career and where you've cooked before?
I have been with the Department of Agriculture for 5 years. And prior to that, I was the chef at the Georgia Governor's Mansion for 6 administrations. I thought that was the best job in the world until I started this one, and this is definitely the best job in the world.
Wow.
What does one do as a chef at the Governor's Mansion?
We're responsible for 3 meals a day, and then all the events, state dinners, and any events that are held there. And when I first started... back in 1981, I was about 12.
sure, yeah.
It was very formal. It was 3 meals a day, 7 days a week. We had full-time butlers. And, it was all very, very formal. There was a bell under the carpet so that when they wanted service, they would step on it and we'd go out. And we didn't go in the dining room unless we were called. And,
wow.
It was pretty intense.
Did you ever have a day off? Because 7 days a week is all of
them. I worked with a cook, and we alternated weekends.
Wow.
So
you had every other weekend off. Wow. That's a really major commitment.
Yeah. It was great. I mean, it was a wonderful career. I loved doing it, getting to know the families. It was a different dynamic with each family, but you really become part of the family, which was very cool.
Was it common before you started there for chefs to stay on through multiple administrations? That seems like something that would be personal kind of to each incoming
Well, there
governor.
Was only one chef before I started. Mm-hmm. They use a lot of inmate labor in Georgia.
Oh.
So prior to that...
So that's how you got there.
Exactly. Oh, my past caught up with me. Dang. No, I'm actually from New York. So when I moved to Georgia, I had never cooked greens, cooked peas, made a biscuit.
Wow. And
so, I had a lot of learning to do.
Was there someone that you learned from?
Yes. I was very smart. I hired a 50-year-old black woman that taught me everything I know about Southern cooking.
Awesome.
And when I learned how to make biscuits, Governor Busby gave me a damn Yankee border pass, allowing me to stay.
Oh. Is that on hard copy?
I wish I still had it. I don't know where it disappeared to.
Well, yeah, that's definitely worthy of a frame, I think.
That should go in the museum across the street from the governor's mansion, I think. Let's talk a little bit more about the other chefs, what you guys are doing. Savannah, you were in Atlanta, correct?
Correct.
Where were you cooking before you went to the expat?
I moved back to Atlanta and started working at Twain's, a brew pub in Decatur, Georgia. And I was there for 5 years. And then I did a short stint at Hampton and Hudson. And then I met Jerry and Krista Slater, and they were opening the expat in Athens, and they lured me out there. So it's been great.
Do you like living in a college town that's quite smaller than Atlanta?
I actually don't live in Athens currently. My wife still lives in works in Atlanta, so we found a sweet middle spot, and we both have about 45-minute drive.
That's not bad.
I love Atlanta too, so it's nice. It's nice to be able to go back and forth easily with no issues. So It's not too bad.
I love Athens on a non-game day weekend.
Everyone loves Athens on a non-game. I'm just kidding. I think I have to say go Dawgs or something.
No, you don't. No, you don't. You really don't. War Eagle.
And we're, truth comes out.
Crazy stuff. So we have these bright orange chairs and table, and our house is blue. I cannot tell you how many times during
the season. And what are you wearing?
I am an Auburn. My family is an Auburn fan, so I've been to Auburn in many games. But yes, we get so much crap on game days.
Oh yeah, I'm coming to your restaurant then. Yeah.
Do it, please.
Awesome. And then Greg, you're in Marietta.
That I am.
Talk a little bit more about Marietta. What kind of that town is like in relation to Atlanta, and then a little bit about your restaurant.
Okay, well, I will say that Marietta is known as OM, or Old Marietta, or sometimes referred to not so fondly as Old Money. It's an older area. It's a little bit more of a fight to get towards the modern era, modern times. Like right now, we just got through the fight of the open container, and it got shot down, which I don't know that I'm for it or against it, but we'll move on with that.
When you say open container, this is like on the street?
On the street,
not
yes.
In a vehicle.
On the square, yeah. Now, the square, Marietta Square is an area that, obviously it is a square, but three of the streets are all businesses. One side of the street is the courthouses and all legal areas. So we have events where we close all the streets down, people get to walk around, and it's open container at that point. So people get to walk around with their drinks in plastic cups and so on and so forth. All the areas in basically Metro Atlanta have gone to that on Fridays and Saturdays all the time. Marietta shut it down, only allowed on city-sanctioned events. Besides that, it is a very up-and-coming area. Lots of new money coming in. People are moving out from the urban areas up there because of housing being less expensive. Some really nice houses, new houses getting built. Really, really just up and coming, and new foods coming in. I've been there for about 4 years now, and when I moved in there, I took over a previous Italian restaurant, which is currently what I have. Being from Boston, I found out that even though I am not Italian, I am Jewish, I have a knack for Italian food. You know, as I always say, that Jews and Italians have a lot in common. One, food is love. And two, if you take a Jewish man and an Italian man, you put them in a room together with their hands tied behind their back, nothing happens. They can't talk.
I got it. It took me a second, but I got there.
Yeah. I try. See, because I actually beat myself up out of the talking with my hands for the most part. So it doesn't, the joke kind of falls flat because I'm
but
not doing it.
But you're doing it.
I have to bring it up so people understand what I'm talking about.
Mamma mia.
Yeah. So it's Marietta is becoming, lots of good chefs in the area. We've really drawn in a lot of the Georgia grown stuff. There's a couple of chefs in the area that we've really partnered with local farmers and businesses to make sure that we're using as much Georgia grown stuff as we can. Plus, we've gotten nominated as one of the best farmers markets in the area. So I shop there every single weekend, make sure that I'm using all of their products. I only get their eggs. I only get, local products from them and all of that. So it's a very exciting time. The people in the area are really accepting of it and really welcoming the movement of, I hate to use farm to table because restaurant, everything comes from a farm, but the local movement. And really, it's really exciting.
So, obviously, Boston has a huge Italian food scene, the North End. Are there other influences that you brought with you from Boston? You went to Necce. Are there other, kind of New England vibes going on at your place?
Well, there are. I'm slowly using more true Italian dishes that I'm bringing in, really introducing people to it. It's a slow growth to it. One of the things being from Boston and now coming back up to New York and looking around, I'm so used to the small menus. I'm looking at a couple of Italian restaurants around right near where we're staying, and they have 7 entrees at most. I'm getting told that I have, 15 entrees, and I'm getting told I don't have enough selection.
What?
Yeah. And I'm going, I'm just so, I'm used to the Atlanta, one of the, as I've told, culture shock, getting used to it is in Atlanta, the scene has been, and it's changing now, people are so used to their corporate restaurants.
Yeah.
their chain restaurant. Yeah. So, you know, the Carrabba's, and I don't want to name too many others, but all of those chain larger chain Italian restaurants, people have the 15-page menus.
I hate those.
I'm not used to that. So it's like I have, to me, having 15 entrees is a huge menu.
And it's not realistic for a kitchen to do that.
And a very small kitchen that he works in, too.
Right. Yes.
Yeah, I like to know that somebody is actually, like, cooking my food.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's three of us. There's myself, and I have two other cooks, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's quite a lot to execute.
Yeah, it is. And plus, I'm 100% scratch. I make all of my sausage, sauces, breads, cheese, pastries, pasta. I make everything. Mm-hmm. You know, as I say, if I could not have canned tomatoes, I would. But I can't get Italian San Marzano shipped in fresh, so I have to go with cans. But besides that, it's like those are the only cans I have. Everything else is fresh. I use as much Georgia grown as I possibly can. I use the cream is from Georgia, and it's fantastic. I use, you know, onions are coming from Georgia. As much produce as I possibly can. And I'm very, very specific. I use Springer Mountain Farm chicken, and that's it. So, I mean, those are all the things because of what it signifies. I mean, Georgia is such a agricultural state, and it's really exciting what they're doing.
Agriculture is the number one industry in Georgia. So we are blessed year round.
I mean, if you haven't been watching just recently, they've just forced through the U.S. government was forcing through the whole rescue bill for the Georgia farmers that got decimated from the storms that came through. And it's, you know, that it doesn't get enough play in the media, but stuff like that really hurt Georgia, especially the farmers, but Georgia in itself. And it's great to see that we're, you know, when you start seeing stuff and you start seeing restaurants and farmers and seeing as much coverage as we possibly can get for it.
And Julio, you are the chef at New Realm Brewing, which, when did it open?
New Realm opened like a year and a half ago.
Wow.
Yes.
I visited last time I was in Atlanta because we started at Pond City Market and rode the scooters down the Beltline to New Realm, as you do when you're in Atlanta. And it is just this massive, new, shiny, fun brewery. So tell us a little bit more about it.
It is an amazing establishment. It's a huge space. We're talking about a 20-something thousand square footage brewery. We produce, right now we have on tap between 14 to 16 different types of beer all the time. Wow. And we have a full-swing restaurant. It's amazing, super busy, extremely busy, especially being on the Bell Line. But it's, you know, it's a one-of-a-kind opportunity, you know. I developed my career. You notice with my beautiful Southern accent that I have, right?
Yes.
Somehow,
very Southern.
Yes. somehow I finished in Georgia, right? And, you know, I fell in love with the state, with everything. I seen a company like New Realm, what they have done and how much they have engaged with the city and with the state. I think it's amazing.
And it has like a massive outdoor space too. So it's like, it really just feels like it's like New Realm just kind of, you know, merges with the city and with the Beltline.
It is crazy because we have 650 seats. We don't hold the door.
Yeah.
And we have a beer garden. We have a patio. We have a dock. We have a rooftop. We have three PDRs and 175 seats restaurant.
It's like Disney World for adults.
Correct. Correct. And it's crazy how much it changed. Because you go like a Sunday or Saturday during the day, it's all family and very family-oriented, kid-friendly, everybody walking on the bell line with the children. At nighttime, it's almost like a club. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Everybody looks so good. Everybody's so beautiful. Everybody's drinking beer. And it's like, I can't believe this, how much this restaurant changed. Yeah, like three different personalities. Amazing.
Wow. And so how does that translate to your menu and kind of how are you managing to transition, like, day to night and still fit these very different kind of clientels? And also, how are you working with the brewers around pairing food and beer when you have so many varieties?
That's a great question because we only serve beer, right? Because be based on Georgia laws, you're only allowed to serve beer. We don't have wine. We don't even have bottles of water. You got beer or tap water.
You got beer or nothing.
Mm-hmm. Technically. You know, I think our main goal is to produce food that go well with beer. It doesn't matter where it comes from, doesn't matter what it is. I've been cooking for over 20-something years, and I have never made so much noise with a dish like a mac and cheese like I had done on that place. And I'm like, you know, I've been working so hard, and I came here, and somehow we came up with an amazing mac and cheese, and it's just insane how much popularity that gets. But you know, one of our goal is, and we're only going to serve beer on the state that we are, right? We just opened a new location in Virginia Beach, and with that say, we want to do Georgia beer, Georgia food. We're very locally source oriented, and you know, we partner with a lot of farmers and things like that. We even have standing orders. We don't even order. We're so busy that we don't even order. So just show up every day with 40 pounds of this or that. We'd be fine. So it's you know, it's great to see an organization like that one, and see the founders so engaged with where they are and what they do. So it's just an honor. It's just a blessing to be there.
I feel like we need to put in a plug here for one of our other hosts' books, which came out a year and a half ago-ish, The Beer Pantry, Michael Harlan Turkell. It's all about food and beer pairings. Do you know it? Mm-hmm. So just everybody, you know, at your friendly local bookseller, check it out.
And it's funny because I've been a chef for a winery too. And when I went to beers, I was like, I don't drink that much beer. I'm going to say that loud. They don't hire me. But, you know, it's amazing when you start working with beer and when you really start finding yourself. One of the main things that I did, I spent like a couple of weeks in the brewery, because the brewery opened before the restaurant opened. I don't want to see what they use, what kind of grains they use, what they do, how they do it, you know, what kind of glaze, syrup, you know, stuff like that, spices. Mm-hmm. And how much similarity beer have with wine? How many aromas, flavors, how many different type of hops that they use and everything. So it is a very, very interesting market, and it is amazing. If you really engage yourself with that, you can't like me that now I drink a lot of beer.
I can imagine that there might have been a slight lifestyle shift there. Is New Realm getting into the barrel-aged sour game like so many are? And how is that affecting sort of the breadth of menu that you're offering, kind of going into these really tart beers, really kind of unconventional flavors of beer?
It's actually funny because we do have a barrel age program right now with what's it called? I forget the name of it. Buffalo Trace whiskey, and it's amazing. You know how much the beer changed when you barrel age them, and the flavors are a little bit more complex, but these are a lot more easy to identify them. So you become more familiar with those flavors, and then you start pairing food with that a lot easier. So when we do our beer dinners and all that, that's one of the beers that we always try to have on the menu to do that.
Should we take a really quick break? When we come back, we got to talk about the wine.
We need to take a break so we can pour some rosé.
Yes. And I want to talk about North Georgia wine and like why it's special, because I love the area up there in Dahlonega. So yeah, we'll handle some business and we'll come back and we'll talk more. Be right back.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. The Hearst family has been raising cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of California's Central Coast for over 150 years. Piedra Blanca Rancho in San Simeon is the original Hearst Ranch, founded by George Hearst in 1865. George's son was the famous publisher William Randolph Hearst. In addition to being known for building the iconic Hearst Castle, William was, like his father before him, an avid rancher. In his words, "I would rather spend a month at the ranch than any place in the world." Thanks to one of the largest land conservation easements in California history, a joint effort with the California Rangeland Trust, the American Land Conservancy, and the state of California, the working landscape at Hearst Ranch will be preserved forever. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. My name is Coral Lee, and I'm the host of Meant to be Eaten here on HRN. Every week, I look at cross-cultural exchange in food and contemporary media. What determines authenticity? What, if anything, gets lost in translation when cooking foods from another's culture? You can find Meant to be Eaten wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
All right, welcome back to HRN Happy Hour. Katie is currently pouring us all some tastes of this lovely pink rosé. So, Holly, I want to ask you, can you tell us a little bit more about the wine and the winery and a little bit of an overview of North Georgia wineries? Because I didn't think a lot of people maybe don't know that there's a wine industry happening up there.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. The Dahlonega area, the terrain just kind of mimics the Mediterranean. It's the way the wind flow goes. The grapes are incredible. And Wolf Mountain, this is a sparkling rosé, and they were the first winery to do sparkling wine, and others have followed since. But they really do a beautiful job, and the winery is gorgeous with beautiful views, and they do a lot of weddings up there. But the first year at the Beard House, we served a Cabernet from Wolf Mountain, and one of the guests made me bring the bottle out to prove that it was from Georgia because he didn't believe that Georgia could produce such a good wine.
I love that. I love that so much. What are some of the other wineries that you're going to be featuring at the dinner?
We have Frogtown.
Frog's Leap?
Frogtown.
Oh.
That's in Dahlonega as well. We have a muscadine wine, which is very regional to Georgia. It's a sweet wine. But we are using it with our intermezzo. We have a custom basil lime sorbet, and we pour a little bit of the muscadine wine as a palate cleanser. And it really pairs well with that.
Can you describe what muscadine wine tastes like? Because it is very specific.
Yes. It's a larger grape. It's sweet. So a muscadine wine is going to be very on the sweet end.
Oh, yeah.
But it's a thicker skin grape, and the skin is not really edible. You basically chew a muscadine, spit out the skin and the seeds, and just eat the pulp, basically.
The other day I had somebody try and tell me that a muscadine was not a true grape. Is that a thing?
Actually, if I could jump in real quick, I have sommelier training. It is a grape. It's just not a wine grape.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There's two types.
It's a wild grape.
So it's botanically, it's a grape.
Correct. Well, yeah, no, it really is a grape. It's just, it's an eating grape. There's two, you know, like Concord grapes, muscadine's a technical eating grape.
But our people do like to make wine out of the Concord grapes.
Well, people make wine out of anything.
And that is true. Try and tell somebody from South Georgia that a muscadine is not a wine grape.
Right. Exactly.
You'll have a fight.
Well, it's the same. It's the same with up north. You tell people that from, you know, the whole New England area that Concord isn't a grape to make wine out of. You'll get a great fight.
Right.
Same exact thing. But it's kind of a funny story, and I'm just going to jump in on this one and I'll just back out. But the rootstock of muscadine is actually what saved wine grapes. It is what saved
it
from
Napa in Prohibition.
Yes, well, phylloxera. Yeah. Phylloxera is a pest that killed all of the Vitis vinifera wines when they came over to the U.S. We're talking 1,000 years ago, hundreds anyways. But it was one of the rootstocks they used to actually save it because it is actually resistant to the phylloxera pest. And so that I wanted to jump in on that one. But yes, no, it is really a grape. It's just not technically a wine grape as far as the rest of the world is concerned.
Sure.
The U.S., of course.
So I'm going to pull that out whenever anybody's hating on muscadines. They saved wine.
Yes.
But I'm going to say that.
You're welcome.
That I like to eat them because I grew up like eating them off of a vine in South Alabama. And then the wine to me is like, you have to be in the right place for a muscadine wine. That's not every situation calls for it. But I'm excited to see how you guys do it with the dinner.
I did just jump the gun and take a sip of this because I just couldn't stand it anymore. It smelled so amazing. Can we talk about the wine for a minute?
What do you guys think?
Please do.
It has a beautiful color. We'll try to post a picture of it, but it's like, it's beyond a salmon. It's like a corally salmon color. What are your impressions? Some of you had this before. Some of you, this is new. Any friends in the room also welcome to respond.
Yeah, it is like the most beautiful color. Isn't the Pantone color of the year a living coral, which I think this almost is.
So on trend.
Yep.
Super trendy, Georgia. It's really lovely. It's really drinkable and like balanced. It's not too sweet, not too dry.
I am definitely trying to overcome a bias of thinking that in my head, like, I hear Georgia wine, I think it's going to be sweet, but that's really not at all true. And this is super delicate, it's super floral, it's super effervescent, and it's something I would love to drink anytime. Also, the bottle is beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really is. We're also, one of the wines we're serving is a Petit Manseng, which is a white wine that's won some national awards. It's a really lovely wine from Tiger Mountain Winery, which is kind of in the northeastern part of the state.
Mm-hmm. I think my mom has been to that one. My mom is, like, obsessed with going to the wineries in North Georgia. I think it's part of the reason she moved to Atlanta, to be honest.
Let's be real.
Yeah. Savannah, I have a question for you. So, in moving from Atlanta to Athens, has there been any sort of big change or difference in how you can source and what farmers you're working with?
No, there's a lot of great programs. I pull from the farms in the Athens area. We have a farmer's market. There's also Collective Harvest, which is similar to what Atlanta has as the turnip truck or farms as well, where they pull. It's for farmers that have a big enough crop to sell, but not big enough to go to the bigger purveyors. And I've had long-standing relationships with Springer and some other native seafood. They'll ship it directly to me if I ask for it. So not really. I mean, like I said, Athens is literally only an hour away. Yeah. I mean, I get trucks from Atlanta a couple times a week. I think in the mindset for some people, it's so far, but it's not. So it's actually pretty easily.
So Savannah mentioned farmed when she was talking, and it's a really interesting concept. They call themselves a technology company, not a food service company. So they are not food people at all, but they've set up these routes to go to individual farms, and they hire independent truck drivers that have refrigerated trucks. And chefs can log into the website and see what days certain things are delivered, and these trucks go to the farm, pick up the food, and then deliver it directly to the chefs. So it's connecting a lot of smaller farmers that don't have the capability of getting their product to restaurants, and really helping that out and helping the chefs get great food fresher than they would get it if it had to go through a middleman.
That's awesome. That's really cool. Besides the beautiful peaches and the beautiful blueberries, for all of you, what are some ingredients, now that we're entering summer, what are some ingredients you're most looking forward to playing with and putting on your menus soon?
I think I have this farmer that I love today. His name is Bobby Braid. We call him Crazy Bobby because he looks crazy all the time.
He always shows up just in the middle. He's just like, hey, I'm here.
I'm here. Come to my truck. Look what I have. And I can't go, Bobby, now. You know? But he's a great guy. And one of the things that he's making a name for himself is collard greens and chichito peppers. He has one of the most amazing chichito peppers that I ever taste. And, I think in Georgia, we're very fortunate to have the ability to do that. Remind me a lot, like, back home. You used to go on the street as if you want the pickup truck with produce on the back. And the fact that you're in the middle of the metropolitan city and somebody show up and you just jump on the back of the truck and pick what you want. You don't have that, you know. The people take that for granted. I think it's amazing that we have the ability to do that and to have access and create a friendship with those guys.
Awesome.
Yeah. I will say, for myself, coming from Boston, this is an odd one. My mother's from Iowa, so corn. I've been down in Atlanta since 07. When I first got what they called sweet corn at the time, I was laughing. Because from me and my mom from Iowa, I knew sweet corn. I got what they were calling sweet corn. It was field corn. Now it's really exciting to watch the growth of corn. And it's like in my kitchen, I only use non-GMO. I use no soy products, no canola, no food from China, anything like that. And it's been exciting to watch the growth of corn in Georgia. So I'm looking forward myself to corn season. We're just about to come into it, and the sweet corn in Georgia has come leaps and bounds. It was originally, like I said, field corn. It was stuff that, you know, you go out to the Midwest and that's what they fed to the animals. Mm-hmm. And now It's actual real good sweet corn. Not just sweet, but really good flavor, real good starches to it. Really fantastic stuff.
Is there a specific variety or varieties you're looking at?
There are a few, but mainly, you know, there's a super sweet, which is a non-GMO, but it's a fantastic corn. And then it's just the bicolor corns. There's a few different varieties that I go for, but it's mainly, I'm just looking for sweet corn.
Okay.
And it's sweet corn, to me, specifies it is that you can take it, you shuck it, and you can eat it straight without cooking, without anything on it, and you're getting all sugars. I have farmers that bring it to me in the summer, you know, last year, and it was within hours of picking.
Awesome.
And you can watch as it changes from, you know, to the next day. It goes from super sweet, and you can watch and taste the starches changing. So it's exciting to use it and be able to use it right away and see it. But having watched it come from field corn, you know, quick story on it, I actually had to go out for family reasons out to Kansas, and I flew back to Atlanta with a bushel of fresh-picked sweet corn in my lap, much to the chagrin of the flight attendants.
It's a child under two.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, it was minutes ago. And I had one of my produce reps come in at the threat of firing him. I had him come in and taste it. Like, I shucked it, handed it to him, said, this was picked hours ago. Get me this sweet corn. And he looked at me and said, well, now you know where to get it. And walked away. So now it's exciting to look at the farmers who are actually growing this corn and actually having it be that good. So seeing the produce and seeing not only that, but also seeing how the state itself has invested in the farmers, seeing it just grow that way is what's exciting.
Mm-hmm. Kat, do you have a favorite corn variety?
Well, I was going to ask because my dad, when he would grow it, at home, he would grow Silver Queen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know if that's like a variety that you would be into.
I do, yeah. No, yeah. Silver Queen's excellent.
It was easy to grow.
It's easy to grow. It's just a lower starch content. It is super
he made
sweet.
He cream corn a lot.
Yeah, the cream corn's great with it. Silver Queen is just, the kernels are smaller. The starches are a little lower. It is wonderful. It's very popular. I tend to go with bicolor. Mm-hmm. I like the higher starch content. Mm-hmm. It's for what I use it for. You know, I puree it. I do a giant ravioli. I call them in dentro.
Yeah.
So they're literally the size of a bread and butter plate, and I put two of them on a plate. In dentro e fiorio is Italian for inside out. So I do a ravioli with that. And the starches, having more starch in it tends to actually work better for a filling. Whereas the Silver Queens, they're fantastic. The flavor's great. I like to grill them. I like to cut them off and use them as a vegetable. Mm-hmm. But the puree of them ends up being a little softer, so I tend to go for more starchy.
Oh, that sounds so delicious.
And, of course, it's Vidalia onion season.
I have some in my house right now. You know I do. Yes. Savannah, what about you? Any produce you're excited about?
I'm always excited to see what the farmers bring here because they always, the smaller farmers pick different things and they're like, hey, I tried it this year, take this. And also, being a French restaurant, I'm always excited for this time of year because eggplant's about to come in and I have tomatoes and zucchini, so that means ratatouille time. So I'm super excited about that.
And then Holly, Vidalia onions?
Yes.
Anything else we should know about? Well, let's talk about Vidalia. It's like, why are Vidalia so good?
It's the soil in that region. And it's just, I mean, you can literally take a bite out of one. They're so sweet.
I might do that when I go home.
Yeah.
And this year's been excellent, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've got a really good crop.
Kat's got a wild evening ahead.
I'm like frying some onions. Yes. That's what I'm doing. All right. Well, we are close to being out of time. So is it time for trivia?
I think it's time.
All right, let's do it.
Did you guys know that we were going to make you play trivia today?
I did not know that.
Surprise.
That's Lael's fault. He didn't warn you. All right, so it's gonna be, you know, it'll be pretty easy. You have a lot of people to play with, a lot of teammates, and in honor of Atlanta really becoming, you know, the new Hollywood of the South, people are calling it Yollywood. Have you guys heard this?
Yeah.
Yollywood.
Yeah.
We're gonna do a little bit of trivia about that, about the fact that Atlanta is taking over TV and film. All right. Question number one. Thanks to some tax... Oh, wait. That is the description.
We also should tell you this is shouted out trivia.
Yeah.
They're all on the same
go
team.
Go for it. All right. In 2016, Georgia overtook which state as the top U.S. filming location?
California.
California.
Correct.
Nailed it.
We started off easy.
Yeah, we give you a gimme on the first
one.
And that's a big deal. That's exciting. Yeah, super exciting.
Oscar wrote the trivia, and he's very excited about the fact that Georgia overtook California as the top filming location.
Congrats. For the time being.
Hollywood.
Question number two. Which prolific cross-dressing comedian is often credited with setting off the flood of film and TV content coming out of Atlanta?
Oh, the one who did Madea, right? Yeah, Tyler Perry.
Correct. And I think he's building like a massive studio already has.
I think he already has a massive studio.
It's crazy. He also sold his plane to an evangelical preacher. I don't know if you guys saw the video. We're not going to go there. We're going to move on. Question number three. What was the name of the popular Atlanta-based cooking show that kick-started Alton Brown's TV career?
Good
Correct.
Eats.
Savannah's killing it. Question number four. This is multiple choice. Which?
Whoa.
Wait.
Yeah, sure.
It's multiple choice. Which of the following Marvel movies were filmed in or around Atlanta, Georgia? Was it Avengers Endgame, Ant-Man and the Wasp, Black Panther, Captain America Civil War, Spider-Man Homecoming, or Thor Ragnarok? Greg?
I thought it was all of them.
Correct! He's doing the, keep going.
All of them.
Keep going,
it's all.
I like that now I have like the judge. Like I can be like, judges? And it's Oscar, because he wrote the questions.
On a side note, Holly, our friend of ours, Tammy, is the executive chef for Robert Downey Jr. when he is in Atlanta.
She also was the culinary director for Alton Brown.
Oh, that's right, she was.
We are so connected to the stars. How many degrees of separation? It's like two.
Hey, I met Robert Downey Jr. I got to go and help one day, and I got to, it was just me and him. And I was like, hello, I accidentally made him introduce himself. It was very awkward.
No, you should have. He should be a human like everybody else.
That's actually what celebrities want.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm surprised you know that much. We're chef, you know, watch TV, so it's kind of...
I know, you
don't
have that
much free
time,
right? I'm very
surprised
everybody does that. Yes.
All right, question number five, I think. In the past decade, this is a multi-part question. In the past decade, Georgia has been the main filming location for a lot of popular fantasy TV series. There's a vampire one, a werewolf one, a zombie one, and more recently, a popular sci-fi one focused on a group of young kids.
Stranger Things.
Yes. So that's the young kids. What was the werewolf one?
Werewolf.
Television show?
TV show?
Teen Wolf. That's it?
Shut up.
The vampire one.
Vampire Diaries.
Yes. And the zombie one.
Walking Dead.
Of course. All right. Last question. This is a bonus question. In 2015, I ran into one of the Wilson brothers at Pont City Market. But it was not Owen or Luke. Who is the third Wilson brother?
That's a hard pass on me.
No clue.
All right.
Now, if you ask my wife, she'd probably know this one.
Here are the options. He has made very small appearances in Zoolander and what was the other one? Charlie's Angels. Is his name David, Jake, Andrew, or Mark?
I'm going to go with the Jake.
We got a Jake.
Let's go Mark. I don't know.
Got a Mark.
One for Jake, one for Mark.
Andrew.
Yeah. Holly's right. It's Andrew. It's Andrew Wilson.
The impressive thing is that Kat straight up recognized Andrew Wilson and was like, hey, that's Luke and Owen's brother.
I told my best friend, who's also named Holly, who lives in Atlanta, I was like, I think that's Andrew Wilson. And she was like, first of all, how would you know that? And then I showed her the picture on Google and she was like, I don't know. I don't think that's him. And then I go, oh, well, there's Owen, so it must be. And they were like at Pont City Market together.
Do you guys run into a lot of actors sometimes? There was one time I was at Hampton Huts and someone tapped me on my shoulder and I turned around and it was the main blonde lady in Jurassic Park.
Laura Dern?
Yes.
Hannah's excited about that. That's how you know it's truly become Yollywood.
Well, kind of funny story. I had a reservation somebody put up for, now I'm drawing a blank, Miami Vice.
Miami Vice.
Don Johnson.
Don Johnson.
Oh.
So we got a reservation for Don Johnson, and we're all laughing about it. No, it was Don Johnson.
I want to know, do you have any ridiculous names that these reservations come in under?
Oh, do
you'd
they
be
do
surprised.
Aliases?
You'd be surprised. Oh, yeah, there's tons of them. But he actually came in twice and gave my mom a hug.
Oh,
wow.
It was really him. It was
so
really
Don
him.
Johnson was Don Johnson.
It was Don Johnson. We were all laughing about it thinking it wasn't going
to
be him.
My friend Holly used to work at Alon's.
Yep. I was actually the chef at Alon's.
Oh, you were?
Yes.
And she had Andre 3000 come in all the time. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
He's a big fan of Alon's.
Yes, he is.
Okay, well, we could talk about Atlanta celebrities for like probably another hour, and I'd be happy with it. But I think you guys have places to be, people to see. So we're going to wrap things up. Thank you once again to Holly, Julio, Greg, and Savannah, our chefs from Atlanta and the surrounding areas. Thank you to Georgia Grown. And guys, good luck on your dinner.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very exciting.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Congratulations to everybody who scored a ticket. Well done. Very smart. Very smart indeed.
Thank you to Jeet, our engineer. Thanks to Hannah and Katie.
Thank you,
Oscar,
Kat.
Our friends from Incal, Dara and Tucker. Thanks to Lael for being here. Rock on. I'm Kat Johnson. That's our show. See you next week.
Bye, everybody.
HRN Happy Hour is powered by Simplecast. Simplecast is a popular hosting and analytics platform that allows podcasters to easily host and publish to apps like Apple Podcasts. If you have a podcast or are looking to create your very first, check it out. Try it for free and save half off your first 3 months at simplecast.com/heritage.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please, join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.